Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Oh, hello, I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And hello, I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey!
Hey!
Yes, here we are once again with another episode of Tech Talk. And, well, I have to tell you, if you are not an Apple fanboy or fangirl, well, this might not be your favourite show. That's all I'm going to say.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. We are going to be focusing this week on WWDC. That is the Worldwide Developer Conference that has just happened in America. Yes, I'm not entirely sure where it was, if I'm honest.
San Jose. Do you know the way?
Is that in California?
It is.
Who knows?
Is that? Yes. Well, they're based now.
No, they're in Cupertino, but that's where I guess they could get the best auditorium. I don't know.
Ah, I thought they had their own theatre. Anyway, we'll get into that. Right, okay, so we're going to be talking about WWDC this hour. We, of course, welcome your thoughts on all of this for next week's programme if you want to share them at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. I have to say, it wasn't perhaps the most exciting event in the world. We'll get into that. We're going to be talking about the updates. No hardware announcements. That's the key thing to take away from this. No hardware announcements, but... we did learn a lot about the upcoming new software for the iPhone and the iPad. That's the iOS software. Mac OS as well, the Macintosh software for MacBooks. And as well as that, we learned about what new functions were coming to the Apple Watch. Tim's very excited about one particular feature. We'll
yes,
talk about
I am.
It later. And as well as that, we're going to be talking about the latest features in TV, Apple TV. Actually, do you know what? I'll save the bother on that one. Nothing really exciting happened there at all. So yeah, that's all to come. I bet you can't wait. So that is Tech Talk for this week, talking all about WWDC. Sorry, Android fans, we will love you next week, okay? So, yes, here we are once again. Good to have your company. Thank you so much for being with us. How are you guys this week? Are you feeling all right the day after, the night before and all that?
I'm emotionally spent, I've got to say. What a roller coaster. I laughed, I cried, and it was amazing.
Yeah, WWDC always takes it out of me because you have that anticipation as not just an Apple fanboy, but as a tech geek. You know, the weekend before, you're wanting to see, okay, what's going to come out? What's the rumor? What's going to happen? And then it happens, and then you're reading everything about it. And yeah, like Sean, I'm emotionally, mentally just drained.
Do you know, it's a bit like, to me, like the last episode of Lost, in that, you know, I watched it for all those years, and then at the end I thought, is that it? Is that it? All that build up to that?
That actually is one of your best analogies ever. Yes, absolutely. You're right. There is that slight, oh, okay.
And we see that
analogy
because,
that Sean likes, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah. But I say that because there was no hardware announcements. Nothing new came out. I was kind of convinced. I said to you guys before, if I was predicting anything, and I did put a prediction down, thankfully I didn't put any money on it, but my prediction was that there was going to be an SE2, the iPhone SE2. Or I have to say, my friend Garth, our friend Garth, actually, we all know him, he came up with one of the best ones, which was that he thought it would be called the iPhone SEX, which I thought was brilliant.
Oh, my.
I thought that's, you know, you could just imagine them doing that and then thinking, oh, what have we done?
As its code name while they're working on it behind the scenes, yeah.
But yeah, so no hardware announcements to talk about, sadly, but we will have plenty to talk about in September, I'm sure. In fact, I would say this time around, it was almost, the feeling I got, I came away with two thoughts. One was, well, based on what you've said at this WWDC event, I don't really need to buy a new phone, and I'll explain why later. I kind of felt that they were almost telling me to put my phone down and leave my phone alone, which was a bit of a strange event in that respect. They seem to be taking a bit more responsibility for the addiction that tends to set in with these devices. I mean, let's be honest. One of the things they talked about, one of the top themes, was around phone addiction, where people just spend so much time on their phones, and we all do, far too much screen time. And whether or not you use VoiceOver and you use the excuse, well, it doesn't matter because my eyes don't get any worse as a result of using it because I use VoiceOver. Yeah, but do you know what? It's still addiction. And, you know, that picking up your phone and checking for notifications, you know, has someone liked my post on Facebook? You know, all that stuff. I've got to say, guys, you know, I think Apple did the right thing here in sort of bringing this up, flagging it, and even bringing out some solutions to it as well. Sean, we were all watching this, I should say, together, Tim, Sean and I. And Sean, I know, disagrees with me on this.
Fake news. Look, I know there's some serious issues to this, but I just think far too much emphasis is on, oh, we're all spending too much time in front of technology. It's just the way it is now. There is always something we find to fill our time. And technology, people just think it's a frivolous thing. And it's not. It's not. It's, you know, news and newspapers and information, getting work done. It's just a portal to other things, and it could be fun or productivity or anything. I just think far too much is made as, oh, you're on your phone again. Well, yeah, but what am I doing on the phone? That's the important thing.
That being said, though, Sean, I mean, the way that they're approaching this, yes, they are looking at it from the standpoint of keeping us off of our phones, which, like you said, Stephen, is kind of funny. They want us off our phones, but yet, you know, give us these features to keep us on our phones. So it's, you know, kind of a love-hate relationship right now. I don't know what they're trying to do. But that being said, I don't mind them giving us the option to say, you know what, I'm going to set a timer for the amount of time that I want to be on a particular app, or especially the do not disturb features where, you know, you aren't going to actually get any notifications overnight or when do not disturb is turned on. At least you can make that choice. You don't have to, but you can. And having do not disturb activate when you're actually leaving or going to a particular place. So having those kind of things to say, you know what, I don't want to be disturbed. I don't want to be notified by my phone. I want to actually do other things, and then I'll use my phone when I want to or be notified when I want to. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I know we'll get into it later, but a lot of this goes into some of the parental aspect of what they're doing as far as parental controls. And I definitely don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're off the charts wrong on this one, Sean Priest. you know, this is all features, or they're all features actually, that sit within iOS 12, the new operating system for iPhones and iPads. And this is a limit time feature. Now, you might be thinking, this is a bit boring. You know, is this the best they came up with? Well, no, it's probably not, actually. There's lots of great things that came out. But the reason I bring it up first is because what I think they're doing is they're not only taking responsibility for the addiction, I think they're also trying to prove themselves as responsible people, as a company. That's what I think they're doing here. It's a case of, well, you know, we're trying to make sure that your kids aren't on these devices all the time, but look what we're doing. You know, what are those guys over there doing with their Androids, eh? Oh, they're just spending all day and night on them and no one cares.
Well, that's fine. Tim is absolutely right. Parental controls are different for me. You know, you're taking responsibility for your kids' actions and their time on there, and that's fine. But when it comes to your own use, you know, adding app limits, time limits to it, I mean, what happened to personal responsibility? Take some self-control. Who, when they wake up in the middle of the night and they check their phone for the time or whatever, and, oh no, there's 20 notifications, let me get up and see to them immediately. No, you just turn over. I had thousands of emails from you two last night. I ignored them all. You know, just look after yourself.
Yeah, that's choice, I think. It's less to do with personal responsibility in your case. That's just, I can't be bothered with
laziness.
That. Yeah, laziness with you. But no, I do think there's a problem here with this. I mean, you know, Tim, you've got a young daughter. You know, it must terrify you with all this technology that's coming up. I mean, I know your daughter's not visually impaired, but take that out of the equation for a minute. You know, it's a terrifying time for kids growing up, I would imagine, and for parents as well, making sure that, you know, kids are like these days, they're so unsocial to some degree, despite how much social interaction they have. It's all through screens.
Yeah, there's a happy balance that you have to find in today's world with technology. I mean, I love tech. I've always loved tech. You guys know that. And of course, my daughter is getting into tech. That being said, my wife isn't into tech at all. So we are able to give her that balance. And even at 5 years old, she'll be six next month. She's a whiz on her Kindle. She's a whiz on our iPhones and iPads. And she's so good at this technology. at five, almost 6 years old, yeah, I do have concerns where I say, hey, you know, how's she going to be in 5 years, 10 years? How good at this technology is she going to be? And how much do I want to allow her to get access to and all that kind of thing? So parental controls always, I think, are something that are going to be very important. And Apple's good to do this. They're smart to do this because that's kind of their mentality. They always want to talk about security and privacy and control and giving you that control. And if they said, you know what, we're going to make it mandatory that these things have to happen, well, then, yeah, that would be ridiculous. But the fact that they're giving you the option and saying, you know what, if you want to limit yourself to how much time you spend on Facebook or Twitter throughout the day, we're going to give you that choice. If you want to limit that, not just for yourself, but your children, we're going to give you that choice. And we're going to give you the ability to lock them out of certain genres of apps or certain types of apps or certain, you know, very specific apps. I don't have any problem with that. And it makes me feel good as a parent to know the technology is there because I don't have to go out like in the old days with a desktop computer and find some specific software to lock everything down or find some obscure, you know, setting to lock everything down. I know that it's actually there right out of the box.
Yeah. I still know people that unplug the Wi-Fi router at night because they think
that's you.
Yeah. But you know, there are people that do that. You know, they actually unplug the router because they think, well, that's the safest way to do it. They forget, of course, that the phones immediately fall back onto their own network connection. So limiting time on the phone was a big feature. And it wasn't just for kids, it was for adults as well. Like the Do Not Disturb, you mentioned, Tim, hiding notifications at night. That's a really useful feature because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I get up in the middle of the night and I check my phone. I just have a quick glance at it. And then you're aware of things. And of course, you know, you and I, we all communicate with each other at different time zones. In Tim's case, we just basically assume he's on a 24-hour clock, and we just call him anyway. I can't even think what time it is where you are right now. But it just, to me, it seems that, you know, this is a good way of getting some control. So instead of, for example, having a big pile of notifications on your screen, you just have the clock, and that is it. So if you do check your phone at night, there's no big light there. It'll all be dark and, you know, moon and all that, you know, kind of stuff up on the screen. It'll all be very lovely and very peaceful.
And while we're on notifications, I'm sorry, Stephen, but I was going to say, as long as we're on notifications, they did say they're bringing back a feature that I think had crept in a long time ago, and they took it out for whatever reason, and that was group notifications. So you do turn your notifications on in the morning, if you've had it on Do Not Disturb, number one, it's going to cycle in kind of slowly instead of just everything popping up instantly at once, and you'll have the ability to group your notifications. I don't know exactly how that's going to work, if it's going to be by app or by genre, I think maybe even both. And I like the fact that they're not just going to pop in and you'll be inundated with all the notifications at once and not missing them, and you can group them. So I really like that in part with this whole, you know, control of your phone.
That is a good feature. I mean, it's only been an Android since, I don't know how long, maybe 10 years ago or something?
Are giving some Android love today then. Yes, this should have been in ages ago. You know, I've got 10,000 notifications all for my Ring doorbell saying a bus went past, you know, motion detected. I want to be able to clear them in one go. So this is great.
Yeah, really, really good functions. Group notifications. Hurrah! Screen time as well. You mentioned that, Tim. We'll just maybe touch on this since we're here. This is now a thing where you can, with kids, you can have a report of what your kid's doing on his or her phone. You can also get reports on what you're doing on your phone as well. You can see how much you're using it. Maybe you think to yourself, I may need to cut back on my usage, or am I using it too much? That this will now tell you. And it'll also tell you things as well, like what notifications they're getting, how many as well, and you can start to limit that. So it gives you a bit more control over your phone. I think this is good.
I like this feature, but I'm not sure I want to know either. I'm really kind of afraid to see what my usage ends up being at the end of every week.
We could have a little competition. This could be interesting.
Yeah, I think by the sounds of it, I'll win that competition or lose it, depending on how you want to look at it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And allowances as well. That was an interesting one. So you can have downtime for kids as well at bedtime. I should have this with my wife because my wife sits on her phone all night in bed. She'll lie in bed and she'll say, I can't sleep. Yeah, because you're on your phone. Get off your phone. So maybe I should set that up for her. She would love me for doing that. And, you know, you can also, and more importantly, I guess, and more seriously, you can control the content and the privacy features as well. So, security, privacy, and attention to the phone or addiction to the phone. That was raised in WWDC this year, which I thought was quite clever, actually, and well done to Apple for doing it, even if it is just, you know, to keep the politics of it good. And despite what Sean thinks, it's a good idea. Now, I want to talk about measuring tapes.
Oh, now, okay, no, I'll let you go first. Go on.
Right. So, measuring tapes... I don't know about you guys. Do you measure things? Do you get your measuring tape out often?
No.
Right.
Not often, but if I had something accessible and cheap or free, I might. Go on.
Yes. Thank you, Tim. Well, I do. My mother is a huge DIY fan, right? She's incredible with the DIY. My dad couldn't tell you anything. I mean, he's useless at DIY. And I'm the same to some degree, but I like to dabble. And I like to measure things, and you know, if I'm buying, say for example, I'm buying, I can't even think what, but maybe buying something and I need to know that it's going to fit in a certain space. I'll give you an example. One of our rooms, this sounds ridiculous, one of our rooms we're putting a sofa in, and one of the many rooms in the Scott
in
house.
In the west wing, yes.
east wing, actually.
Sorry.
But yeah, we're going to put a sofa in there because we have a bit of a den, you know, we're going to have the TV up on the wall and stuff, and you know, kind of cuddle away den kind of nonsense. So yeah, we're looking forward. Oof, yeah, it's going to be lovely. Yeah, especially when Sean comes up. This is going to be good. So, but I need to know that the sofa is going to fit. So I need to measure that space. Now, for anybody else, you just grab a measuring tape, you know, hold that end, you know, and all that nonsense. And it's all very simple. But of course, if you can't see the measuring tape, you have a problem. Now, you can buy talking measuring tapes, which cost £99 from my last check. No, thank you. And I think you can get some tactile ones. Is that right? You'd mentioned this to me before.
Of course you can. Tactile ones are fantastic and cheap.
But what if you could use your phone? Well, this is the latest suggestion. And actually, I'm kind of overplaying this hand a little bit. but this is a latest suggestion of a new app that's coming out in iOS 12 called Measure. Now, what we're talking about here is AR, augmented reality. Now, I have to say, this is the bit where I tend to switch off. Because when I've heard about augmented reality, I thought, yeah, it's all about, you know, visual stuff. You know, it's too visual for me. One example that they used, actually, in one of the previous demonstrations of it was you go onto the IKEA app and say you've got this desire to buy a chair. And the chair, it looks lovely and all that, and you can see the picture of the chair, you can obviously rotate the chair on the screen and all that stuff, but wouldn't you rather see it in the environment it's going to live? Well, with augmented reality, you can hold your phone up to the space where you want to put the chair in your house, and it will sort of drop the chair into that space. So, you know, it puts the chair, which isn't real, obviously, it's just a picture, but it makes it look as if it's in place in your room and lets you see the size and see how it works. So you might be seeing where I'm going here around measurement. And that is a really useful tool for people who can see. For us, I don't care. I'll just buy the chair. If it doesn't fit, I'll move something. knock a wall down. Do what needs to be done. This is kind of leading towards this new world of being able to use your phone to do a lot more than just, you know, that. You know, actually be able to see things in situ. And the measuring app, which is what I was really interested in the demonstration they gave, Phil, who was doing the demonstration, he put a suitcase on the desk and he was able to measure from end to end using the phone. Now, from what I've heard, it was a little bit, you had to apparently drag something on the screen. So I don't know how accessible this is all going to be, but it is an Apple app. So I am fairly convinced it will be. And essentially what you're doing is you are measuring the suitcase in this case, and you know, he was able to find out what the measurements was. I actually thought it was a brilliant feature, and I'm quite excited by it.
Oh, you were moaning all the way through. As soon as AR came up, you're rubbish, all visual. And then the measuring app came up and you suddenly bucked up. It was amazing. You loved this thing. Look, it is interesting from the fact that this is the real world and computer vision and all being mixed together. From that point of view, I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I thought when this measure app came up, I was afraid that Stephen had dropped his bag of crisps and was just, you know, the whole thing was all over.
Never happened.
Well, he catches them very quickly. It's his lifeline. But no, seriously, yep. I was really impressed with the demonstration. Now, I did find out shortly after the keynote there are measuring apps out there already in the App Store that use AR. Not all of them are great. Some of them are okay from what I can read and understand. But if Apple's going to do their own and make this a competitive thing or make this a thing, I'm eager to see it. I will use it, I'm sure. I'll probably run around the house the day that iOS 12 comes out and measure everything in the house just because I can, you know, and then probably never use it again. Although, yeah. That being said, I like the idea of being able to know that I can if I need to and that it is there, that I don't have to worry about, okay, I've got to go online and order something that, you know, I don't already have because I didn't need it, you know, didn't have a use for it. And now I have this right there in my pocket again, something that maybe I will use if I do have availability of it. But yeah, I think AR, you know, you're right, Stephen, in the sense that AR may be too visual and people with no vision maybe aren't interested and people with low vision might be. But there are these practical uses for it, like you were talking about with measuring and putting virtual objects in a room. I think that there are practical uses for it. There are silly, crazy uses for it, of course, where you can do different things with your face and you know, filters and things like that. My wife did something recently with our daughter on Snapchat where they were able to use augmented reality with the camera and put some sort of, I don't know, lizard monster or something into the frame, and it had sound effects and moved and it walked through our living room, and they had it come over and like it was attacking me, and apparently what they say on the video, it actually looks like there is this lizard monster in our living room walking across the floor and coming over to bite my face off. So
how lovely.
Yeah, how lovely, isn't it?
Lovely, like, family time.
Yeah, I was like, thank you so much for this. Well, wonderful. But that's just kind of a silly, fun kind of use for it, a game use for it. And they did show other ways to use this in games at the keynote. But I think there are practical uses for it. And I'm hopeful that because AR uses object recognition to know what's in that 3D space, I am really hoping that that part of it can be useful for the blind and visually impaired going forward.
I think that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's a capability we're looking at here. I mean, we're seeing one example through measuring. But, you know, the possibilities here, I mean, we can't even fathom them yet. I keep thinking, how would I use this? And I know people have talked about, you know, looking at it the other way around. If you spin the whole thing around, could AR help you to see things that are coming up and be able to identify them? And that is one way that this technology could help us. I don't think having a chair be able to be seen in space in the place that's meant to sit will make much difference to us. But if we were able to know that there was a chair actually sitting there, that could be useful. And I guess it's tying together artificial intelligence and augmented reality, which is, you know, that seems to be how this might work. And you can sort of see it coming. It's not there yet, but it's definitely nearly on the roadmap, isn't it?
It's the core technologies behind this. Of course, they're presenting it as this fun and exciting thing, and you know, 80% of it is going to be visual. It's an exciting thing, but the core technology behind it is being able to see and work out what objects are in the real world to be able to overlay computer graphics on that. And that's the key point for us. If it can identify something that's a flat vertical surface or horizontal surface, this is the building blocks to where, okay, there is a door to your left, there's a lamppost to your right. You know, that's where it starts to become interesting for us.
And I actually found something when I was looking at other measurement apps after the keynote. I found one app that does measurements, but also has a side feature where you can point your camera and using AR and that spatial recognition, it can tell you how far away whatever it is you're pointing the camera at is. So if you've got a wall or a door or a hallway or something like that, you can actually point it and it'll say how far away that solid, you know, structure, table, wall, whatever it might be, is. That's something with object recognition and spatial recognition could be very helpful for O&M and for people that are blind or visually impaired.
Yeah, because that takes us to the level, we've always talked about how GPS is wonderful to get us into an area. So if I'm wanting to find, as I had this problem in London recently, I was walking around this street, I could get to the street itself, and then maps just said, arrived, okay, there's about 800 doors here, which one is it? And that's the problem, finding that the last 10 yards or the last 10 metres or however, which currency you operate in. But that is a really interesting thing, because if that sort of hands off to AI, and it's able to identify the door and the number on the door and all that, you know, that is where things get really interesting for us. So, yeah, I mean, there was the fun stuff mentioned. I mean, they talked about Lego. The guy from Lego came out and he did a demonstration. They had the sort of building, the actual real building of a Lego, whatever it was, house or whatever. And then using augmented reality. The guy's holding up his iPad, and that world around that building came to life. And there was little Lego men and Lego women as well, equality across the board. A little Lego men and women walking around and jumping into cars and driving about, and all very bizarre. I've got to say, I think people have, you know, far too much time on their hands if they're playing with all that kind of stuff. And what's wrong with real Lego? That's my question.
Tactile. Have you ever stood on real Lego?
Oh,
this
yes.
is far better. The kids, man, kids would love this stuff. I would love this stuff if I could see it.
Yeah. It is good. It is good. But we can't see it, so that's that. Right, okay. So let's move on. Sorry, guys. Let's move on to Siri. Now, thankfully, Siri got some... Well, a bit of a boost, shall we say. Maybe not as much as I would have liked to see. I feel that Siri is nowhere near as good as Amazon Echo, Google Home to some extent. I mean, I think Google Home's actually very good. It tends to get underplayed a bit because Amazon was here first in the UK. So I think it gets the prominence for that reason. People went out and bought it. You know, you're not just going to go out and buy a Google Home unless you're us for the sake of it. We did buy the Google Home Minis. And I don't know where yours is, Sean. Mine's is in a drawer.
No, mine's out. Rest of my family absolutely love it. They prefer it to the Echo.
See, my wife prefers the Google Home to the Echo.
Yeah.
But I said, well, unless you're going to go and buy more Google Homes, then, you know, you're stuck with her. But yeah, you know, a Siri isn't quite there yet. And that's a bit surprising, considering the fact that apparently they were working on Siri before Amazon ever did Alexa. So we shall see. But anyway, Siri, a couple of updates from them on her. Shortcuts was one. And this is actually quite good. This sounds like a good idea. So essentially, this is where apps can use the power of Siri to get things done. A great example was given of the Tile app. Now, if you've heard of Tile, And this is something we actually should be talking about a bit more on Tech Talk, because it's a brilliant little thing. Little square, which maybe about an inch square, something like that.
Yeah.
If I had a measuring tape, I'd be able to tell. So about an inch square, I think. And it basically attaches to your keys, or it can attach to your dog or your friend. Or whatever.
Is that what that is on my back? Stephen,
yes.
You're tracking me.
I like to know where you are. I like to know you're okay when you're stuck
when
in hedges.
You are always getting lost in fields and hedges.
Yep.
And you know,
that's a good idea,
places.
Actually, yes.
We need to keep track of you, Sean.
Exactly. It's like, you know, find my keys, find my Sean. Siri Shortcuts helps to sort of work with that app so that you can use it. So you can now say, find my keys. And your Tile will start beeping, because that's what it does. It's just a little Bluetooth noise-making thing.
Beeper.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was looking for. Bluetooth beeper that basically tells you where your keys are. So, let's just maybe forget about Siri for a second. Brilliant thing for blind people, because if you're always losing things, people, dogs, then it's always good to have one of these handy. That could be really quite good. I always imagine going to a conference where everyone wears a Tile. And you want to speak to someone, you just say, find John, and suddenly John starts beeping. I think that would be fantastic.
It's a good idea.
They should do that. Why don't they do that? But yeah, this is a Siri shortcut. So you, in the Tile app, you could, there'll be a button on there that says add to Siri, and then you can enable that. You can choose to use it. But you can also group various shortcuts together. So let's say, for example, you're going home and you... and I think the example they gave was going home from work and you like to listen to a certain radio station... RNIB Connect Radio, obviously, or the Tech Talk podcast or whatever. You can set that as a shortcut. You can also then say, for example, you like your temperature to be set at a certain level. Maybe if you've got electric blinds, you can have them raised or lowered, or, you know, even set the kettle to come on, whatever it is. However you've got your house set up with the smart tech, you can sort of line all that up so that in sequence all these things will happen, and it's to make your life easier. I think this is great.
I really like what they've done with Siri Shortcuts. And this is actually, excuse me, this is something that I think has come from a few different things, because they finally got serious about Siri. They hired on one of the leads from the Google Assistant team earlier this year. And so he's been really trying to take them in the right direction with this. And last year, if people remembered, the very popular app Workflow was purchased by Apple, which does exactly what you're talking about, Stephen, where you can set these routines in order, kind of like an if this, then that, if anybody's familiar with that app, where you can set up all these different routines and then just give one command. And the purchase of Workflow was a big deal when it happened, because I was very hopeful. Everybody was very hopeful that this is what they would do, that they could incorporate it somehow with Siri. And I think they went above and beyond any expectation, and hopefully app developers get into this. I mean, up till now, I think there was only, what, 5 or 6 different things that Siri could do within an app with a developer, and it's not been widely adopted enough, quite honestly. So I'm really hoping that this is something that developers will jump all over and say, yeah, we're going to let you activate or access several different things within our app and give it, you know, access to Siri shortcuts. So all you have to do is assign that one phrase to it and away you go. I'm really excited about this. There was something else that they mentioned I wanted to throw in real quick. I heard that secretly, quietly, they've updated Siri's ability to give you information about sports, celebrities, food, and health, or food and fitness. I don't know why they didn't mention that. I guess maybe they didn't feel that it was a big deal, but there were some behind-the-scenes Siri enhancements, and that was kind of a side thing that was mentioned after the fact.
Now, that's what I was hoping to hear, that there was some, you know, almost background enhancements and improvements to Siri, because, yeah, they did focus on the shortcuts, which is fantastic. Workflow, for anyone that's used the app, is so accessible. It's almost like, you know, building up these macros, these programs, just dragging and dropping blocks around. And it sounds terrible from an accessibility point of view, but the way that the workflow company did it was amazing, so accessible. And the fact that now Apple have got this and this is how you build the shortcuts is great news. But yeah, Siri just seems so behind all the other smart assistants we've got now that I'm hoping there's some more improvements in there that they didn't focus on quite so much. But the shortcuts, really good.
And what was really nice about those shortcuts was that they said that there's going to be a library of predetermined shortcuts, and hopefully that library only gets better, whether it's Apple making additions to that library or users making it, kind of like you can do in workflow, or if this, then that. And so you'll have actual choices where you can say, you know what, I just want to pick this template out of a library that they've already created and just use that template instead of having to create your own. But you can also create your own. So I liked the fact that they thought enough to say, you know what, we're going to make a library of templates that you can use right out of the box as well.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, you know, WWDC is a bit of a headline event. You know, there are lots of things going on below the surface of what we're hearing. And you're right. I mean, we, you know, for example, accessibility wasn't even touched on iOS 12, and it generally isn't. But we do know that there will be updates, and we'll learn more about that over the course of this week, and that's something we can pick up on future programs. Right now, though, I want to talk about tongues. Yes, tongues, because...
That was a change of direction. I didn't see that one coming.
Just about a handbrake turn there. Yeah, because tongues. Now, who'd have thought... I mean, measuring tapes and tongues. Never have thought that was going to be my pickup from the WWDC this year.
Not a segue I would have expected, no.
No,
it's
exactly.
An episode title if ever I've heard.
Tongue time. It's tongue time with Sean Steve. No, let's not do that. Right. No. But, oh dear.
Please
I feel quite dirty all of a sudden. Wow. Right. So, tongues and detection. It just gets worse. This is a new feature that Apple has brought in, because if any of you use, and I guess you need the iPhone 10 for this, if any of you use any of those animojis, you know, the heads that can be foxes or cats or dogs or whatever, and you can speak to your phone and it will sort of mimic you. Well, of course, one missing feature from that was its tongue. So now
that's
you
the
can,
first thing I thought. Where is the tongue?
Exactly.
You know, exactly. I think we all thought the same thing.
In 2018, civilization as it is, I think that is definitely the question most people are asking themselves. But now you can stick your tongue out, and so will the fox or the dog or the cat, or apparently now there's a dinosaur and something else. I don't know. I mean, this doesn't interest me. Does anyone care about this stuff?
Yes, of course. It's fun. This is the mainstream. This is the youth, Stephen. We're far too old for
it. I don't care. I'm too old. I don't care.
Yeah, look, of no real interest to us, but yeah, this is going to be big. It's going to take off. I'm not talking about the tongue detection. That's nonsense. But, you know, it's just that it's slight improvement.
It's kind of bizarre, isn't it? I mean, it's such a weird feature.
It's really weird and really odd, but I'm sure Apple had some sort of rationale or reason to say, hey, you know what we need? We need tongue detection. And I hate to even admit this, but my, you know, almost 6-year-old, I can see her just making these animojis and sticking her tongue out every chance she gets. So I hate to even say that, but I see children just saying, yep, this is fun. I can stick my tongue out. And now with you know, the next part of this, the Memoji, I think is how they called it, that could be, you know, even more of a feature, I guess, if you want to call it a feature.
I don't think people, I'm sure people are going to say, oh, look, tongue detection, that's so ridiculous. But I think Apple were being, a bit, yes, we know what this is, but we're going to mention it anyway.
A bit tongue-in-cheek.
In fact, I think they were being tongue-in-cheek, Tim. Hey! Correct.
Hey! Oh, dear, that just wasn't worth the wait. Memojis is the new thing, so you can create your own avatar. So if you don't want to look like a dinosaur, you can look like yourself. I don't know what's better, if I'm honest.
I do look like a dinosaur, so...
Oh, well, there you go, then. You're fine. Sean, you seem to know more about these things. Tell us a bit about how these Memojis work.
Well, if anyone's had a Nintendo Wii in the past, it's very much like those. They're almost sticker book. So it isn't... I was hoping it was going to be something like it takes a picture of your face and does a 3D model, something real tech like that. But no, basically you just pick the face shape, you pick the eyes, you pick your hair colour, you put on hats and sunglasses. So again, look, it's just a fun, frivolous thing. But so you're making your own animojis, and then you can use these to do your own facial expressions and talk when you're talking. That, again, the technology behind this is quite amazing, because the way the animation works on here, it's so smooth, so responsive. It is really impressive. I mean, the use case for it is slightly, okay, that's interesting, but the technology behind it is amazing. And you're able to use these heads that you make as part of you in iMessages, in FaceTime, which we will get onto a little later. Yeah. It's just a fun little thing. No, I liked it. A big cartoon head. What more do you need?
And I think, honestly, that this is a shot across the bow at apps like Snapchat, because this is really Snapchat's bread and butter. This is what they do. My daughter spends, tons of time on Snapchat doing different voices and faces and, all kinds of different things. And so to be able to do this natively right on the iPhone, that's exactly what this is. This is them saying, no, Snapchat, we want a piece of this market too. So here it is. This is our version of it.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's good for the kids. I suppose, if we have the function, we'll probably play with it for 5 minutes and then get bored with it. The kids all use it all the time. I just worry about these things. I mean, essentially what they're doing is they're kind of creating another personality for people. And I just think if you're shy, this might be a way of you being able to talk a bit more through some cartoon Disney-style head. But I don't know. I just find it a little bit bizarre.
But this generation, that's what they've been used to. I mean, people that have been playing multiplayer online roleplay games for, that couple decades now, that's what you do. Half of the fun of setting up the game is creating your avatar and getting your character to look just right, and your armor or clothing or whatever look just right. And
that's a
game. Big part of that gaming. But I think that this is going to appeal to those same gamers, that even children that want to have their own avatar in a way and say, you know what, I want to create this. And they might even want to make it look like themselves. Maybe they'll make it look like some other creature or person or whatever. And that's going to appeal to those gamer types, I think.
Yeah, I've got a spot in my face, so today I've decided to be a crocodile.
Sounds good to me. Tim's absolutely right. It's gamifying messaging and just adding that extra layer of fun. It's very Ready Player One.
Okay. What about FaceTime? It got a bit of an update, thank goodness. There was a feature brought in which, by the way, is shocking and incredible all at the same time. Yes, group FaceTime. The thing you could do on Skype since it was born, you can now do on FaceTime in a few months' time. And apparently you can get up to 32 people. Don't know where that number comes from, but 32 people can join you on a FaceTime call. And what's worse is you can use your Memoji instead of your real face. Do you know, it's just getting ridiculous. Our Perfect. Team meetings are going to be ridiculous.
I can't wait for our next meeting. No, this is something that they desperately needed. Everyone's been shouting for this for about 5 years. It's a great feature. I just wish it would have been here earlier, but we will definitely use this.
Yeah, the audio quality of FaceTime audio and even FaceTime video, it's so good and so responsive that this is, definitely something that's long overdue. It was shocking from the standpoint that, I'm shocked that it wasn't there 2-3 years ago. But it is incredible that it is going to be finally there. And like you guys said, I'm going to be using it all the time. Might save us some money on other services.
Well, yes. I mean, so we use Zoom a lot of the time, which is very popular among blind people, because it's a great way to get people into a virtual room. But FaceTime...
Very accessible.
Very accessible as well. But FaceTime, even more accessible, arguably. So, Yeah, you know, and what I also like is that if you've got group chat with messages, and we do, but this is one thing the three of us have, we have a group chat where we email each other, lots of nonsense usually, and somewhere in there we get some work done.
How dare you?
Well, it is, let's be frank. But, you know, you can now start group calls through FaceTime on your message. I like that. And also, say, for example, Sean and Tim have started the meeting, and I'm maybe a bit late to it, as is often the case, then, you know, I can join in later. You can sort of just jump into that all through messages. What I like about this from an accessibility point of view is that everything is in one place and you know where you are. You know, it's this kind of jumping between apps sometimes that does my head in. Whereas if I can actually just get to the thing from there or here or over there, you know, if you're in the messages app and you want to group FaceTime, you just do it. I love that. That's a really nice feature.
I just wish it was made available on other platforms. If this was on Android as well, and Windows and wherever else, because this is on Mac as well, you know, it would be the ideal platform, really.
Yeah, with it being locked into just the Apple ecosystem, that does hinder it just a little bit. So if we are needing to talk to anybody who's not on an iDevice of some sort, yes, that could be a problem. But otherwise, I think this is going to be fantastic for Apple users, and I like the implementation of it. So yeah, it sounds like it's going to be really nice.
Yeah, I agree. I think iMessages and FaceTime would be brilliant on Android because, do you know, part of me, I'd mentioned this to you before, when I had my turn with Android, and by the way, my Android phone is back. I've snuck it back in because I am using it again. I got a bit fed up with the SE, if I'm honest. So I thought I'd go back to the Android for a while. I'm still using my Moto G5, which is probably not the best example of Android, I guess, but, you know, it does the job. And I've mentioned this before, I find it a little bit easier to see. So that's interesting. But, you know, aside that, would it be amazing if I could get iMessage and FaceTime on it? Absolutely. That would probably even, well, maybe not probably, but it would maybe push me further towards going down the Android route. Android got mentioned, hurrah. Right, okay.
Another one.
Yeah, let's get into the watch then. I mean, there's lots of other things going on.
Hang on. Talking about your SE, we got to mention the performance gains are amazing.
Oh, yes.
This is almost like getting a new device. This is, I think, what they were talking about when they're saying they're going to concentrate on reliability, stability. But the performance gains from iOS 11 to iOS 12 across the board, starting at the 5S, you know, they're talking between, I think you said, Tim, 40% to 70% faster.
Yeah, 40,
that's amazing.
Yeah, 40% to 70% faster depending on the device, and then app launching and app switching 2 times faster. So just the overall speed in general is going to be so much faster, and then double the speed of launching apps. Yeah, as I told you guys before we got together here, I'm due for a battery upgrade to my iPhone 7 because it's below that 80% mark that, you know, says there's a battery instability and could cause issues with the CPU and all that. So I'm very willing to give them my $25 and say, okay, put a new battery in. And then when iOS 12 comes, if it really makes my iPhone 7 that much faster, boy, I might hold off another year.
Yeah. That's the interesting point. I did say at the top of the show that I probably wouldn't be buying a new phone as a result of this latest update because this goes right back to the iPhone 5S. They did mention iPads as well. I don't know what version of the iPad.
I think it starts at the iPad Air and the iPad Mini 2.
Oh, right, okay. Typical, I've got the iPad Mini 1. poor little thing, it's just left to die. But yeah, this is great. I mean, if you've got an older device, it's going to be given a bit of a new lease of life with this software, which, you know, Apple, I've noticed this from the OS, from the Mac OS point of view, I've noticed this a lot. You know, my dad's got a 2007 iMac, and it runs fine. It absolutely runs fine. It doesn't have an SSD in it or anything, and it's still fine.
Wow.
And that's, you know, what we're now 11 years in, so that's pretty impressive. So, you know, if that's continuing to the phones, that's going to quash a lot of those concerns they had, and people would always say, a new update comes and that's my phone dead. Well, you know, if you're on a phone below the iPhone 5S, you maybe need to have a word with yourself, I think. It's time to move on. Time to move on. Now, moving on swiftly, actually. Watch. Yes, the Apple Watch has got a new feature. Tim is overjoyed at this one.
Oh, I am overjoyed about all of the Apple Watch features that they announced, from the health and fitness aspect of it to the communications aspect of it. I am all over the Apple Watch updates and am ready and waiting for Series 4 to come out, hopefully in, you know, later this year. But yeah, a couple of the things that they've done is you can now, first of all, going back to the iOS side, you can send audio messages in iMessage. You've been able to do that for a long time. We do that all the time and you know, send some serious, some not so serious messages to each other. And now you can actually send audio messages using your Apple Watch, which makes the messaging ability of the Apple Watch so much better, I think, to be able to, instead of doing the scribble, if you can see to scribble, or using emojis or short messages, just to record an audio message and send that on, I think is very helpful. And a walkie-talkie feature, which there's been walkie-talkie watch apps, but they just don't work very well. They're not really good. And I'm really hoping that, you know, Apple doing this themselves, of course, will expect it to be accessible. And the demonstration, if the demonstration was truly a live, real demonstration and not recorded or whatever, which they usually do it live, it was fantastic, guys. I was really impressed with the walkie-talkie demo.
It was impressive, great high audio quality, but it was so sickening. It was so sweetly, sickly, terrible.
Just to paint the picture here, the woman who was doing the presentation, she was on an exercise bike, and she was showing you, you know, whilst doing a presentation. That was quite impressive. I don't know.
Short straw.
She lost a bet somewhere on that one, but she had to present on this exercise bike, and she was showing how you could connect. Now, didn't get into this, but she was talking about how she could connect to the exercise bike at the gym using the watch. I've got to say, there's a bit of a hang on, hit the brakes on that one for a moment, will you? Because how does that work and what does that mean? Does that mean we can see the stats from the bike on our watch, which means
yes,
it's accessible?
I think that's exactly what it means.
That's impressive. That sounds good to me.
No, that's been there for ages. That's nothing impressive. Sorry. I want to control the machine from my Apple Watch, and I don't think that's what they were saying.
That would be amazing. Not control it, no, but you would get the stats. You get real-time stats from the bike.
Yeah.
I think that's extremely good. Helpful. If I can go to the gym and get someone, because obviously a lot of this equipment, you're welcome. A lot of the equipment obviously isn't going to be accessible, you know, to actually touch the screen and do things like that. Some gyms might let you put a bump dot on it or something, but most of the time you're not going to get accessibility, but you're going to have to get sighted assistance to operate the machine. However, that's never been my bigger problem. Getting assistance to set up the machine and get going has never been a problem at the gym. It's getting that information and putting it into my phone or my watch or the health app or whatever, and getting that information tracked and to be able to say, you know what, I can go on my Apple Watch and connect with my accessible Apple Watch and get that information sent to me that way. Well, that's fine. That's all I need. I mean, yes, would it be nice if I could control the machine itself? Sure, obviously, but you know what? I'll take it. If I can get the health stats part of it, that's, you know, a good start.
Boring.
For me.
No, listen, you know, this is exactly what we've talked about umpteen times. The only way you'll ever get any of this stuff to be accessible is to make it to the mainstream. And if there comes a point where a sighted person says, wouldn't it be great if I could just, instead of using all these buttons on this machine, I could just do it on my watch? And that means I don't have to touch this thing. I don't have to look at anybody now because I've got my phone. I don't have to touch buttons anywhere. Then, you know, that is how that will happen. And then it will become accessible to us. So, you know, it's all about the path to accessibility, guys.
Baby steps. Okay.
Yes,
well, we need Amazon Echo to move out of the home in the kitchen and into the gyms. And then you could just talk to the gym equipment using an Amazon Echo. There you go.
Do you know, actually, I think I've just come up with a new prediction, guys. I think that is going to be first. I think there's more likelihood to see that than there is seeing attached to the Apple Watch anytime soon. That's agreed. A good point.
I think that was Tim's prediction. Are you stealing that one?
I think it was, but that's
I think
okay.
I'm taking that one. I like that one. Thank you. Right, so yeah, the walkie-talkie feature.
Sorry,
love
Tim.
It. That is brilliant. If you have a desire to talk to your watch, but you hate saying "Hey Siri," because of course talking to a watch is perfectly natural, but for some reason using the words "Hey Siri" just takes it to a whole new level of uncomfortableness, then you can now, well, you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to say "Hey Siri." In the new watch update, OS 5, you can just raise your watch and start speaking to it. That's not going to be confusing at all, is it? That'll be perfect.
Well, especially since I've turned the raise to wake feature off, because every time I lift my arm to do anything, no matter what it is, you know, opening the refrigerator door or a cabinet or just lifting my arm for whatever reason, silly thing, you know, wakes up. So I've turned that off. So I just have to tap it to wake it up because it was driving me crazy and it was killing my battery. So if I want to use this, I presume I'll have to turn that back on. I don't know. So, I mean, that'll be a personal thing, but I like the idea of it. I like to be able to just raise it and talk to it without having to say, hey, you know who, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this works out.
Mm. And you can also now see your heart rate on the watch face. They're bringing out one of those. So a watch face now you can go to, which will tell you the heart rate before that. And again, this is this whole thing about getting access to things in a very simple way quickly. You know, if we wanted to check our heart rate, and by the way, if you do live with anxiety and you have any issues, you know, in that respect, having your heart rate pointing at you constantly is probably not the best thing. You know, oh, it's too high, and then suddenly it's through the roof.
It's too low.
Yeah. So, you know, that might not be the best thing, but, you know, in all seriousness, from an accessibility point of view, it's a good thing because it puts it front and centre. One other thing that I know Tim and I are quite keen on, Sean, I know you want an Apple Watch at some point.
Definitely.
This might be of interest to you. It's certainly something that annoys me of the Apple Watch. If you get an email and it has a link in it, you can't do anything with it. You just get the link. Or sometimes, in fact, most occasions, any emails I get, you open them up on the watch and they'll say you have to go to your phone to read more. Whereas now, Tim, they're changing that.
They are changing that. You're absolutely right. So they're not going to incorporate a full Safari or web access to this. It is a web kit, they're calling it, but you're not going to be able to browse full internet pages, although I think that could be possible using VoiceOver, but people with vision aren't going to really want to do that on their watch, I'm sure.
Stuff them. Make them try.
Yeah, exactly. But that being said, yes, you can now interact with those links that come in notifications or even in an iMessage, and then you can actually get some information. So you can get a headline or a general brief you know, description of what it is. And if it's something that you get from, say, a restaurant pay app or some sort of delivery app. So that's the part that Sean should like for his takeaway. If you get a notification saying it's on the way.
Facts are facts,
Mr. Priest. You can actually tap that link and it will take you to where you can pay for the takeaway or handle whatever it is you need to do or confirm the reservation that you had or whatever it might be. You couldn't do those simple things before and now you can. So I'm really happy about that.
Mm. This is definitely one of those things where accessibility beats the mainstream. As you said, with VoiceOver, it doesn't matter about the size of the screen, we could do a full website browsing experience on that just using VoiceOver. But look, it seems to me, you're absolutely right, Stephen. I do want to jump on the Apple Watch, but it's just a little bit too limited for me at the minute. But these features, the audio messaging, walkie-talkie, the WebKit, it actually feels like it's maturing now. It's getting to that potential where I think, this is what a smartwatch should be. So I'm definitely going to look out for the Series 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about the Series 4, like I said before. And even some of the simple health and fitness things they added today this week with the event, you know, they added yoga and hiking. Well, I mean, I'm trying to get in the yoga. I'm not going to be out hiking. So if I'm out hiking in the woods, I'm not hiking. Come find me, please. Just send out the dogs and come and get me.
You're getting into yoga. I'm more intrigued by this.
Yeah. Well, then I'm getting into yoga. I have actually downloaded some accessible for the blind yoga practices that they describe it very well for the blind.
Oh, perfect.
And I'm looking into mats and I've talked to some people about it because I think it might be something helpful for my health. So I'm looking into it. I haven't done it yet, but I'm looking into it. But that
I'm looking forward to that audio piece, Tim.
I will do that. Yes. but yeah, so it's nice that they've added things like that. And what I really like is now, which Fitbit, as we know, has been able to do this for a while, but you can now challenge your friends with workouts. You can do a 7-day challenge with other friends that use Apple Watch. It'll actually automatically detect your workout now. So if you started working out, you forgot to start that on your Apple Watch, it'll automatically recognize that you're starting the workout and you can go and log it later. So those kind of simple things that, again, Fitbit's been doing for a while, Apple Watch is catching up. It's really rounding out the Apple Watch, like you said, Sean, to give it more features. I think walkie-talkie and more health and fitness features, you know, communication features, things like that. And you know, these links, I know you downplay the links, but having that access on your watch makes you bring out your phone a lot less and makes the watch much more important.
And again, you know, if you're using VoiceOver, and we all do with our watches, then, you know, it could make that content easier to access. And they're doing podcasts. You can listen to Tech Talk now on your Apple Watch. How cool is that? It's $2,000 over again. Yes, it's great. Let's talk a little bit, because we've got very little time left. I want to talk a little bit about macOS. they're getting a dark mode, which means that you can invert the colours on your screen. It's going to be great.
No, it is great. I mean, that was the only thing I picked out of the whole Mac OS presentation. But the dark mode is important to me. I always have the invert colors contrast mode on because I can't stand the white screen when I open a web browser or something. It just burns my retinas out. So the dark mode for me is important. And the reaction in the room, it seems like a lot of people love this feature.
Well, yeah, photographers, isn't it?
Oh, thank you, Steve. Yeah, the developers went crazy for dark mode, and I was very interested in that because I'm like, well, why are the developers happy about this? What is the big deal here? Or maybe that was just the Apple dark mode team that was cheering. I don't know, but they really were excited about it. It was like it was a bunch of blind and visually impaired people, and they're going, yay, this is for us. But yeah, you're right. I think this was the biggest feature, if you want to call it that, of Mac OS. Mojave is the new Mac OS.
Oh, yeah, the name. Yeah.
Well said.
The desert, which they
Mojave.
Actually... What's that?
I'm just trying to say the name.
Mojave.
Mojave. No,
was kind Mojave. Of kind of pushed and kind of not a secret anymore because apparently they had pictures of dunes, like sand dunes, up on the stage before it started. So people are already kind of figuring out, aha, maybe it's a desert. But yeah, I mean, other than the name and the dark mode, I mean, they did some desktop things and screen capture video and all that. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, yawn. But dark mode, yeah, if I had vision back in the day when I had vision, dark mode would have been very helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good feature. Also, getting a new app store as well. It's about time. The Mac App Store could do with a bit of a refresh. Hardly anyone uses it. So, it's one of those things that's about time. And also, they did make a big point about not merging iOS and macOS. And then went on to talk about how they're kind of merging iOS and macOS. So I don't really know what that means, but this is a project that's been talked about a lot. I think they call it Project Marzipan. That was the reason I remember that name is because it's food related.
Of course.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, this sounds quite good, actually, Marzipan, that is. And then I remembered what I was listening to. And so basically the suggestion is that you merge together these apps, you start working so that people who are making apps, the big problem is people aren't making apps for the Mac App Store. That's the issue. What they're trying to do is convert them by asking the teams who are making the apps for, say, the iPhone or the iPad to maybe just do a little bit of extra work on that work they're doing, and that would make it available on the Mac App Store. So it makes a lot of sense from a business point of view for companies that are making the apps. It'll also make it more attractive to them and all of that. Look, we've only got a minute left. Overall, good WDT. Are we happy with it?
Absolutely. It's always slightly underwhelming at the end of it. Oh, is that it? I was expecting more, but when it actually comes out, iOS 12 or Mac OS, I think once we get our hands on this stuff, I think we will notice a difference and really like it.
And there's always more that they don't have time to talk about at the WWDC keynote. I mean, it was already 2 hours and 15 minutes as it was. So there's so many more things that, as we always know, when iOS 12 beta hits and people are using it and we get more information, there's going to be other features and things that we'll find out about.
Well, great fun as always. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Catch you next time on Tech Talk.